Welcome to the best of the RSN Breakfast Club. Here's a little bit of what we did. Take a listen.
And Mike joined us on a Friday morning as always, and I'm sure he is caught up in royal fever. Good morning to you, Adam.
Good morning to you, Daniel.
You caught up in royal fever?
No, not at all.
Make your way to Albert Park yesterday to pop in and say good day to Harry and Megs.
No, I didn't. She didn't bake, and as soon as I knew that was going on, I just thought, you know what? No. I'm not impressed by handballs and commuting on a tram. I'm impressed by banana bread. There could have been all sorts of things made this time, but nothing.
Did you notice that when she was playing with the Australian Rules football...
It actually had Australian Rules football written on it.
Well, two things. Yes, that, which was slightly unusual. We'll have to have seen T.W. Sharon there. But also she chose to be bound by blue. And she's clearly been inspired by the recent appointments at the Carlton Football Club, and she decided that navy was her colour and now her team in the Australian Football League. Isn't that great?
Well, she'd probably get a game.
Or quite. Concerned about the handball. And that's disrespectful to the whole industry. You're being facetious and nasty on a Friday morning.
Well, there are situations where players say, well, I played when I was a kid, you know, in the backyard, and all of a sudden they've got a spot on a list.
Well, that was in the old days. Things have changed. You will see on Tuesday for the AFLW draft that the next generation of stars are coming through, and they are very, very good footballers, Adam. You're being facetious and nasty. You're in a mood today. You've been in a mood since the minute you walked in. I'm concerned about you. Adam Romanaskis is also in a mood. He is a Bombers champion. Well, it's probably overstating in a touch, but he's a good fella. And he's part of our team. Good morning to you, Rama.
Good morning. I'm still getting over Graham Wright yesterday when you're talking about the famous number five and the question you asked there, and he said, oh, I couldn't care less about the number.
He didn't say that. Don't you put words in Graham Wright's mouth.
Shut it down in flames.
It's a legacy number.
Yeah, and that's what you use, legacy number. And he goes, no, we haven't discussed that, actually.
Yeah, well, that don't be surprised if that's not quite entirely the truth. As you know, lying is the second language in football, and you're the principal liar in the game after destroying it on Wednesday night. Destroying it.
You know what I did yesterday?
Well, this could go anywhere.
Maybe this is the reason
anywhere
for the attitude.
This could
no, no, no.
This
no,
could
no.
be the attitude yeah. reason.
No, not at all.
What's
not
happened?
All. I picked up my son from school, and we walked a different way through the schoolyard to get to the vehicle.
On purpose?
No. I was running a little bit late, so I had to sort of that emergency sort of park in a side street type situation and sort of get to school on time.
Right.
Because I was playing golf. Anyway, I walked through an area of the school that had bat tennis courts.
Ah, yes, bat
now,
tennis.
Now, did you play bat tennis as a kid at school?
I was the Roger Federer of bat tennis.
Well, I was the Stefan Edberg, so there you go.
Well, you would have been. Not quite good enough.
So you played it a lot as a youth?
Mate, I owned the bat tennis courts.
Did you play it?
Yeah, absolutely.
So did you get the situation where you had the wooden nets that construct the net before school?
Correct.
Or whatever the case may be?
Yep. Yeah.
And what colour bat did you use?
Red.
That's right. You know, the reds were a little bit heavier than the other ones.
Never noticed that part, but just that was the one we had.
Yeah. I brought back some good memories of a kid of playing bat tennis and how much fun that was, and you'd... Yeah, I know in my situation, I'd get to school sometimes at 7:30, 7:45, and play an hour and a bit before school. We were allowed to get the net out, and then you had to put it back in before school started, and then you'd get out again at lunchtime.
We couldn't quite afford the wooden net at Dufton Primary School. We used to just tie a rope. That was it. Just a rope. And then the amount of fights and bat throwing, the ball went under the net. No, it didn't. Yes, it did. Then the bat would get thrown and game over.
So you had the four coloured bats that you could choose from in the tub, the red, the blue, the yellow, and the green.
I'm not sure we had four colours.
Yeah, we did.
I reckon we had two colours. Red and blue we had.
The yellow ones were quite light for whatever reason.
For the preppies.
We were pretty poor. Red and blue. I think we had.
I actually bought my own.
God, why does this not surprise me?
And put the...
Did you engrave it?
No, I didn't engrave it, but I think I might have.
The Whitey Wonder Bat?
Got the towel.
Natural style?
The towel tennis grip and put it around the handle.
Yeah.
Just to give it that little bit of extra pop.
But the bat tennis court also doubled as a four-square court.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Absolutely.
That's when things got real serious.
Problem was, the four-square/bat tennis court was at the end of the down ball court, so you couldn't actually have two decent games of either going on at any one time, so you had to pick and choose. And being a down ball aficionado, it was difficult sometimes to choose.
I wonder if these kids are playing any of these games at school now.
Well, that was why I asked Campbell, you know, have you seen the kids play that? And there wasn't really a positive response to that. Now, he is only in prep, but you know, it was our livelihood, you know, because you would play that at school and then you would go and play tennis after school. It was the sort of your introduction to tennis. Whereas
that was about status in the school grounds.
Yes,
playing those sports.
You know, if you had a good serve, you could serve volley and all those sorts of things. But the thing was that you drive around a lot of tennis courts these days and there's no one playing tennis. No. Whereas back, you know, 25 years ago, you go past a tennis club on a Saturday morning and you'd almost, the times you'd have to actually wait to get on a court. So I
posed that question to both of my sons who are in grade 4 and grade 2. I said, what games do you play during snack and lunchtime? And the little one, he loves his sports. So he's basketball and cricket and football and soccer and whatever. And the eldest one, he goes, well, we play wall ball. I said, what? Wall ball? What are you going to do there? You got a bloke standing against the wall, and they've got like a basketball style. They've got to slap the ball and try to get that person out against the wall. So I said, do you play four square? Do you play chance? Do you play brandy? Any of that sort of stuff? No, play wall ball.
A lot of those things would be banned in schools these days. But one thing is that basketball is just massive in schools.
Yeah.
I've been really surprised by that. My wife's a primary school teacher as well, and you know, basketball is just massive for kids under the age of 12. They just love it.
Participation wise for junior basketball is through the roof. Both my boys play, and we play for St. Christopher's Basketball Club, which is a fantastic club, and they're a club with probably the least amount of teams, and within the under 10s and under 12s my boys play with, I think there's 5 St. Christopher's teams in there, so that's a big number. But then if you look at Aberfeldy Basketball Club, they've got about 15 teams in each age group.
Mm. What?
15 teams in each age group.
Bloody hell.
But see, it's interesting because I'm learning a lot of this as I go because my kids are very young and I've only just started the primary school experience. But it is interesting how local basketball clubs get into the schools. Mm. Take training at lunchtime on a Friday and then have school teams in a club-based situation on a Friday night, is that they're getting kids interested in basketball. Now, Campbell was never interested in basketball because I wasn't, but he now really enjoys it because he's been exposed to it through the school. They're not doing that with cricket. Football's a little bit different. You obviously do that through your Oz kick, but basketball's really infiltrating the schools with kids at a very young age, and they play mini ball, and it's really interesting how it happens.
The part with basketball, it's not an expensive sport. The games are over. You're done in 1 hour.
It's a parent's night, a dream. It is.
Yeah.
Until you start having to drive to Dramanda to play. And
yeah. Once you start playing representative basketball on a Friday night.
Leave rip ball line.
That's when you get, like, I appreciate and respect my parents so much more. Both my brother and I played for Dandenong as kids on a Friday night.
There's not a chance for you to just pump your tires up.
But I'm talking about the driving and the appreciation you have from your parents.
Did you play rep basketball?
Absolutely, I did. Absolutely, I did. Like you went on holidays last year. Like most people do. The distance they had to drive on a Friday night in peak hour traffic was ridiculous, and it's worse with traffic. I'm talking 20 years ago.
Right, let's talk to cricket boys, because overnight we ended up with the Pakistanis declaring their second innings at 9 for 400, giving us heaps to chase, and it didn't start well for the Australians. One man who's been watching it all, in fact, he owns the whole game at the moment, Adam Collins from Wisden Cricket's been good enough to join us. Good morning, Collo.
Morning, Half. How are you?
Going very well, thank you. Just on being the biggest name in cricket at the moment, how is that sitting with you? Kerry Packer-style.
Yeah, I think that storyline has almost ran its course now. But no, it's been a wonderful experience. I've loved every minute of it. I'm exhausted, and when the test match is over, I'm looking forward to a couple of weeks of closing myself off in a quiet room with no device.
Are you a power broker or a media magnate?
Neither. I'm very reluctant to accept the premise of the question. But no, the Pakistan Cricket Board, there's my old political skills coming through there. No, the Pakistan Cricket Board were, you know, very kind to take a punt on letting me do this. And the team we've assembled has been fantastic, and they've all had a real crack. And I think the broadcast we've put together is one that we're all really proud of. So we're nearly at the end of the road, obviously. More than likely, it'll be a four-day test, and tomorrow's the final day. And we'll have left this project thinking we've done a good job, and hopefully something we can try again at another time when Australia play overseas.
I must admit, I enjoyed some of your work last week when I was holidaying on a little remote island off Singapore. So you're doing a hell of a job at Wisden Cricket, and it's great to have the coverage of the series on the radio. Tell me, was Azhar Ali talking about your ownership and your magnateship in the middle of the wicket when he got run out last night?
It was crazy, wasn't it? So he said after play that, well, he took full responsibility for it, first of all. There would have been a pretty cynical way of interpreting that, like, you know, the usual nonsense you hear about spirit of cricket, which is wheeled out by people when it's convenient. But he didn't run any of that. He said that it was a, you know, terrible misjudgment, didn't know what was going on. He's responsible for, usually batsmen are guilty of ball watching between the wickets, and that gets them in trouble. This is the opposite of that. It was probably the only major talking point, apart from Usman Khawaja's knee on a fairly dreary day when declaration batting, well, we saw the best of Test cricket last week on the final day, the fourth innings, all the results on the table. This was the opposite of that today. We all knew the declaration was coming at some stage, third innings batting. It was fairly grim at times with five men on the fence and just trying their best to contain runs. And for the most part, Australia bowled really well, but there was a sense of inevitability about what was going to happen, which was they'd have to bat for an awkward period before stumps, and sure enough, Shaun Marsh fell before the close.
This is the problem when you can only bat 50 overs, Adam, that the game is completely out of your control.
Yep, precisely. So much as it was in Dubai last week when they lost 10 for 60 and lost any meaningful chance of winning that test match, the same was on day one. It's amazing to think that Australia had them 57 for 5 or 5 for 57 on the first ball.
Yeah, yeah.
And yet we can be this far behind a couple of days later. So they let a massive opportunity slip in the middle session on day one, and they've been playing catch-up ever since.
There's a headline in the paper this morning that says, Uzi knee blow. How serious is this injury? Because he has done his ACL in the past. He injured his knee in the warm-up going into yesterday's play, or today's play, wherever, depends on where we're talking. What's the situation?
Well, it was an interesting way it was communicated through the course of the day. Initially, we were told that he'd be out for a couple of overs. He was just getting it looked at by the physio. It happened just before play in a fielding drill. Nothing, apparently quite innocuous. It was a catching drill. He felt some discomfort and went straight off the field. But a couple of overs became a session. Then we were told that they were going to ice it in the middle session and receive some more treatment. He didn't come back out after tea. And at the close of play, we were told he was getting a scan tonight. So we'll learn more tomorrow. So, I mean, I guess the good news is, if you like, is that they didn't immediately, you know, send him out to hospital when it first happened. I expect that logic would suggest if it was super serious, they would have taken action earlier in the day. But on the other hand, as you say, Whitey, with a history of knee problems a couple of years ago, I mean, who's to know?
Now, Adam, Shaun Marsh, that's another failure. So he hasn't passed 50 now. I think that's in 12 test innings. What do we do here? What do we do? It's look, every time he goes out, it seems, oh, he got a great ball, so he'll be right. He'll be right in the next innings. What do we do?
Yeah, Rama, it's funny how good balls follow guys who are in bad nick. And Shaun Marsh is in fairly ordinary nick. What the scorecard won't show is the four balls he played and missed that before getting bowled. So, I mean, it was a cracking delivery from Harmsa to pick him up. But he looked scratchy. His only runs were an edge over the top of the cordon in the first over of the innings. So, look, I think the consensus is that when in form, Shaun Marsh is a must select. But when he's out of form, you almost can't pick him. So he's in the latter category at the moment. He has probably four Shield games, depending on whether he plays in the white ball internationals at the start of the season or not, but at least a couple of Shield games to try and regain some touch. The broader narrative around the whole Australian team at the moment, of course, is that they're missing Smith and Warner, and as a consequence, can you afford to leave out a player with the experience of Shaun Marsh against India, a country he's played a lot of Test cricket against? That's a convincing argument on one hand, but on the other hand, if he's out of form, he tends to be a walking wicket. So, look, it's going to be a complex decision for the selectors to make between now and the first week of December when they play India in the first Test match.
It's a big good morning to the world's greatest form analyst on the Breakfast Club, Dean Lester, who joins us every week for the Friday Form. He's back again. Good morning, Dino.
Good morning, Daniel.
Are you up and about?
Absolutely. It's Caulfield Cup Eve. Why wouldn't you be?
My appetite was whetted last week with the guineas, and I'm very excited about tomorrow, I must admit.
Are you fashions on the field again? Backing up?
No. The title was
the blue
was
pastel.
Nice.
Oh, the blue pastel was outstanding.
The baby blue. They seem to like that.
I think it got a run on off the bit the next the next few days.
Yeah, it did. And I got another one, a bit of a darker blue,
uh-huh.
Which is coming up next week on off the bit.
Righto. Must watch television.
Matches his beautiful eyes.
Yeah.
They pop. My eyes pop, they tell me, Dino, when I wear those blue jackets.
Yeah, you're radiant with that colour.
Let's not overdo it. Nick Quinn, speaking of radiant, is in the studio with us from the tab this morning. Good morning, Quinny.
Big week for punters at Caulfield so far. The heavily backed favourite winning both the Caulfield Guineas and the Blue Sapphire, and hopefully that trend can continue tomorrow.
Can I ask you about Blue Sapphire Day? Is it a big day for the tab?
It's solid.
It used to be old Thousand Guineas Day.
Yeah, I think what's happened is we've seen the Saturday get even bigger in terms of an interest and turnover perspective, and obviously the Wednesday has suffered as a result, but it's still a really nice midweek program, and Group 3 racing midweek's always a good thing.
Righty-o, well, let's get our teeth into the quaddie. First-time players, that's what we do. We have a bit of a look at the quaddie legs in the Melbourne Metro meeting normally on a Saturday. That's what we do on a Friday morning. So we've got a ripping day to get our teeth into tomorrow, and we start with Race 7 is the first leg of the quaddie tomorrow, the Coogee Cup. Over the 2,000 metres, and there's been a scratching. Sir John Lavery for Liam Howley has been scratched, Dino, but we've got Best of Days for James Cummings and Super Freak James McDonald on board, tab favourite at $3.20.
Yeah, and I think we'll also have 60s Groove scratched 2.5.
Of course, after winning yesterday.
I think he's got a great chance, Best of Days. He ran well behind Furion last start, and he's obviously close to a win. I think Trap for Fools will just run along in front here and be very hard to run down. His effort in the Turnbull Stakes was terrific against Winks, and he just makes his own luck here, and he's the one to beat. Certainly, I think Best of Days is the main danger. I think the other James Cummings runner in Tally, he ran well in the Turnbull as well, and he was only second up there, so he's open to improvement. And I would just think that they've targeted races like the Coogee. He won a similar sort of race over the Sydney Championships, winning the JRA Plate. So I think he's a good chance, and maybe Life Less Ordinary next best. But I think the principal chances are 3, 7, and 1, and maybe number 4 next best.
Number 3, Trap for Fools, has been 650 into 420. Now the second elect at that quote, Best of Days, a 420 favourite. Do you anticipate Trap for Fools might even jump favourite if this trend continues?
Strong chance. Probably depending on how the day's panning out by this stage, because you know where he's going to be in the run. He's going to lead. So if the leaders are going okay, he could well start favourite.
All right, so we hope that happens because we love Jared McLean here on the Breakfast Club, so we hope Trap for Fools runs well for him. 3 from 7 and 1 in the first leg of the Quaddie, the Coogee Cup. The second leg is the feature, the $5 million Group 1 Stella Artois Caulfield Cup over the 2,400 metres. A full field going around in Kingsville Dream. Well, the market didn't change too much. We spoke about that earlier in the week after the barrier draw because all the good ones drew well, Dino. Kingsville Dream for DK Weir and C. Williams at $5 favourite at tab.com.au.
Yeah, and he's had a terrific preparation into it half. They've known since winning the Mornington Cup in April that he was in the field. So he's just been building his form at weight for age. Now he gets to a handicap race where he drops in weight down to 53 kilos. As you mentioned, a good draw. I think he'll run very well. I think a horse with a similar profile is Holmesman, who had a pretty solid hit out last week in the Caulfield Stakes, but back to a handicap here. Ben Mellon probably, that's about as light as he rides, 53 kilos. I think he'll get a great run from the draw. I think they'll be very similarly placed in the run, so I think they'll be pretty conscious of each other, and I think they've got great winning chances, numbers 13 and 14. I think it's 5 main chances, and I think the others are 7, the Taj Mahal. He's come up with a wide draw, but I think he'll roll to the front, and I think then it probably James McDonald will get going early, a bit similar to Yucatan last week. I don't know if it'll be as successful, but I think he'll ride him aggressively and put him into the race, and I think he can run well. Young Star, obviously the run behind Winks was terrific. Getting around Caulfield, different scenario here, bigger field, but she's a very good mare. And I think the Cliffs of Moher was a terrific run last week. Just where he gets to from that inside draw, if he can hold his spot early, then he's a great chance. It'll just probably be the first 400 metres that decides his fate a little bit.
So $5 the field at the moment, Quinny. Kingsville Dreams had a terrific campaign, as Dino said, leading into this, but still good value for plenty of runners in this race.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And considering Kings of Dream got as short as sorry, King's Will Dream got as short as $4.60 a month ago. The $5 on offer does appeal. The Clipsimer has also been popular since the barrier draw 8 into 7. But Dean, I just wanted to ask you about the Japanese duo Chestnut Coat and then Soul Impact. They're hard to assess, but we've seen historically these runners have always performed well here. Is it worth keeping them safe for your multiples just in case they are too brilliant?
Traditionally, probably they've been a bit hit and miss, I think. I mean, we've seen, obviously, Admire Acti and saw the Quinella and the Melbourne Cup, but there's been a few in between. Chestnut Coat looks a reasonable quality horse. He's got enough weight, and Soul Impact's got the outside draw, and I'd be sort of risking them, to be honest.
Chestnut Coat, when they had that owners' meeting about what are we going to name this horse, Dino, how long do you reckon that meeting went for?
I don't think they put a lot into it.
Chestnut Coat.
Mm.
That's what it's got, Whitey.
It has. They probably didn't spend enough time on it.
But regardless, they've got a Caulfield Cup runner. And Mick Price has got his first Caulfield Cup runner, Quinny.
He does. Mighty Boss, who basically Mick was saying he's going to just close his eyes and someone's going to let him know when the race is over. He's not overly confident about the 100-to-1 shot there, who did win at similar odds in the Caulfield Guineas last year. One other runner, Dean, I just wanted to ask you about is Soundcheck, number 5 from the Moroni stable, who is a beautiful-looking beast. Do you reckon he'll take benefit from this run towards the Melbourne Cup?
I'd say so. He's a horse that's been sort of on the radar for a while for a Melbourne Cup. His wins in Germany, especially one at 3,200 metres, was outstanding. And his most recent run to Best Solution was quite good, and he's got a very good record. He'll probably have to go back a little bit from the draw here, but as long as he's hitting the line, I think he'd be in contention come Melbourne Cup day.
Now, we did see an absolute bolter win the Caulfield Cup last year. Yeah. If there was to be a shock, who would it be? If you had a $2 That's free a good bet, question. Who would you have it on?
As in, what price was our winner last year?
Boom time.
51, was it? 51?
Yeah, 51 into 35, I think.
Have the long shots. Gallic Chieftain.
The Chief.
Only because he's drawn 2, and you look at the draw, he's got Cliffs of Moher outside him, Homesman, Kingswell Dream. I just think he'll be in the group of the right horses, where last week he was out very wide on the track. So if there was an absolute bolter, it would be Gallic Chieftain for me.
Trained by Darren Weir as well. So.
Rama, you were talking about Gallic Chieftain in our pre-show meeting.
Yeah, I don't know why.
All of a sudden the chest is out. Yeah, isn't it? Guru-like.
When the guru says the horse's name, and I'm no guru horse racing man, so I don't know. I think it always runs well. Always runs well, Gallic Chieftain.
2 weeks in a row, a little bit of editorial content from Rammer in the racing segment.
Yeah, we think that's fantastic getting involved. So numbers again, Dino, for that second leg, the Stella Artois Caulfield Cup?
13, 14, 7, 18 and 2.
All right, that is the first two legs down of the quaddy for Caulfield Cup Day. Time to turn our attention now to our jockey in focus, the jockey in focus for our superannuation partner, Lucrative Super, because every Australian deserves financial dignity. And today, that jockey is Tim Clark, who joins us on the Friday form. Good morning, Tim.
Morning, guys. How are you going?
We are terrific, thank you. Just before we get too deep into this, we had a chat to a mate of yours, Aaron Pike, the other day after his win in the PGA. He was talking about your ride this weekend. I want you to have a listen to what your mate Azza said.
I do know that Timmy Clark is on a horse in the Caulfield Cup, and he did give me a call last night to let me know I'm probably going to go to the Caulfield Cup, and he thinks it's worth a go, so maybe the listeners should have a go at that.
So you didn't say too much because you didn't tell him what the name was, Tim, but it is, of course, Mighty Boss. So is Aaron on the money here? What's going on?
Look, it's good to see Aaron get a win the other day, and I'm not sure when he done that interview. He might have been a little bit hungover still. But, we're going to have a throw at the stumps and with the Mighty Boss. Obviously, I've got some other good rides on the day. And but it's obviously exciting to have my first ride in a Caulfield Cup. And, as I said, he's drawn a bit awkward. I would have loved to have drawn a bit softer. But, we can't win it if we're not in it, that's for sure.
That is true. Dino's keen to talk to you about some of your other rides as well, Dino.
Yeah, Timmy, you've got 4 other really good rides and you've been in great form, 8 wins from your last 14 rides, and Graceful Glamour's one of those good rides in the Ethereal that you won the Oaks trial on a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, she's a tough little filly, and I think she's just shown that she's appreciated stepping out to these longer trips. Obviously, it's another step up in class for her again on Saturday. But she couldn't have been more impressive at Flemington, her first go down in Victoria. She's been back to Sydney, just had a trial to keep her ticking over in between. She trials sort of as good as she can trial. She's one of them horses that she doesn't give you much of a field sort of at the trials and that, but definitely race day, she gives you everything she's got, and she's extremely honest, and she'll make her own luck up on the speed, and she's sure to run well again.
Probably the same applies to Thinking Big. He'll be up on the speed. I've thought he's a Derby chance for a while. He gets his chance in the Caulfield Classic back onto a drier track.
I think the drier track's really going to suit him. When he won the Gloaming at Rose Hill, dry track, showed a really good turn of foot. I think just the other day he was second up off a sort of little let up, and it was 2,000 at Randwick, and done a bit of work early in the race, and it just told on him late. But now with that run under his belt, the 2,000 dry track, he's a lovely horse, and Gay and Adrian have had him earmarked for the Derby for quite a while, so I'm sure he'll bounce back and show his true form there tomorrow.
You won the Tristark last year for Gay and Adrian on Global Glamour. You ride Shamook tomorrow. Another one back onto dry ground and back in distance.
Yeah, I think back in distance is going to suit her, although I think she will stretch out over further in. No worries, but I think that she's back in trip. She's really hard fit. Can probably be aggressive on it tomorrow and really make it a bit of a test. And she won the Golden Pendant in good style. Beating, although Invincibella was unlucky that day, but still was able to beat her. And she's obviously gone down to Melbourne and ran well. And she's got form around Savagiano and this preparation. Then you go back through all the form last prep. She ran some great races behind, Group 1 winners. So really high class mare that'll she'll look to win her at some stage, no doubt.
And you finish the day with Parast, who you had a terrific winter campaign with up in Brisbane, and he's fitter for one run back from a spell.
Yeah, still might be a run short. He's a horse that he takes a bit of racing to reach his peak. So whether he's just sort of still a run short, and I'm not too worried about. Wouldn't be normally too worried about drawing out a bit wider on, because he just likes to roll and find his position, but there looks a fair bit of speed underneath him, so just how much work he has to do to get into a spot is obviously going to be vital, being second up 1400, how strong he is late. But on his Queensland form, this is definitely a very suitable race for him, and if he was to show his best, he'd be right in the finish.
We are halfway through the Friday form. Caulfield Cup Day tomorrow. $5 million feature. Race 8, 440 on the local guides. The 2,400-metre feature for the Group 1. It's going to be good fun. So we're two legs down, two to go. Race 9 is the third leg, the Tristark Stakes. Time-honoured Tristark Stakes. There are 14 going around at this stage, Dino, and Invincibella. And then we spoke to Tim Clark about his ride, Shamook, in this before the break. Prince Invincibella for Chris Waller and Huey Bowman is favourite at $3.90.
Yeah, I think the Sydney form will probably dominate here, Half. And I was really interested to hear Jockey Clark mention that Shamook will probably just roll to the front and make it a bit of a test. I think that's a really good plan, because I think she can get the front pretty easily. And she beat these mares, probably, as he mentioned, a little bit luckily against Invincibella, but Invincibella's going to have to get through traffic tomorrow and he'll be away and gone. So I'm with Shamook to beat Invincibella. Invincible Gem is a really good mare that usually races against the males. She's back to mare's grade. She's really well placed here, but she'll be a long way back in the run. Need a bit of luck getting through the field, but she's very good. And Booker was a much better run last week, and I think she's probably the best of the local chances. So they're the main four. If you're going wider, I think Alika Zoom's come up really well, number 9, and Savatiano had no luck at Flemington behind Invincibella. But 7, 3, 4, 6 for me. If you were going wider, probably 9 and 11 next best.
Shamook, a $9.50 chance. 75% of the boys in the studio reach for their phones. What do you make of number two, Aloysia Dean? I thought was fair when resuming. Will be second up tomorrow where she's got a good record and on track to the mile.
She's got a great place in my heart, but...
we're off, Dino. We're off.
Next start, 1600 Meyer Classic. Yeah, too short for tomorrow.
Okay. Don't throw the baby out with the bathwater, you boys, just yet.
Throw her out.
Didn't throw her out, but she's not tomorrow.
No, not you, the other blokes. The of little faith. All right, beautiful. $9.50 winner in the third leg of the quaddie there, half.
That sounds a pretty good result for me, if you don't mind. Righto, 7, 3, 4, and 6 in the third leg. The last leg is the Moonja Stakes over the 1400 as well. We've got 10 going around, Dino, and you wouldn't believe it. DK Weir's got Peaceful State as the favourite.
Yeah, he's a horse I'm a real fan of. Half, he had no luck at all in the Sarupa Clark Stakes after a really good first up run to his stablemate Lander Plenty, who of course won the Toorak last week. So he's a great chance. I think Mr. Sneaky's a great chance as well. He comes through the same form lines. His run in the Rupert Clark was terrific. He's just got to sit back, come with one run, and I think the speed will be pretty good up front, as Tim Clark mentioned, with Paras going forward, Ciccone, Tom Melbourne, Music Magnate, all got tactical speed. I think it sets up well for Mr. Sneaky. Peaceful State's the danger, number 5. 2 Parast. Interested that Tim Clark thought he might need one more run, but he's a Guineas Prelude winner at this track and distance. And I thought Dreamforce, who I liked at Flemington, I don't think he really handled the straight that well, but fitter, and he's a chance as well. But 8, 5, 2, 6 for me.
Peaceful State, a $4 chance. Mr. Sneaky at $5 with Dreamforce. You're more forgiving than me, Dino. I thought Dreamforce was pretty disappointing last start, but...
He never changed leg up the straight, Quinny, so that's just it's a no-no.
Okay.
So, do your replays.
I did. Disappointing. You can have...
Speaking of analysis...
Speaking of disappointing, number 7.
What's your number 7? Tom Melbourne. Oh, Tommy. Now... Is there a market? Have you got a special second market for us for Tom Melbourne?
Will he run a place, Dino?
I don't know if even his place stays are with him at the moment. He's battling.
How's your relationship with Tom?
Testing.
Why? Why? Just treat him as a scratching if you don't like him.
No, he's...
You're emotionally committed. Yeah, you're like Rammer and Nick Kyrgios. You're emotionally invested in this horse.
Have you ever?
Well, he entertains too. He's a bit like Nick.
That's true.
Have you ever met Tom?
Oh, I have seen him a couple of times down there. Looked at him a little bit funny. He's just he's done. He's done. I'm not even backing him a place anymore. For a little while, I was just backing him a place only, and that was genius. Working. But no, he's coming off a 6th and a 12th, and no, he's done.
So talking about videos, Dino, and analysis.
I'm going to back him. I reckon this is the time to get on.
getting ready for analysis and form. Tomorrow, the rail is out 6 metres. Does that come into your calculations?
I want to watch how the day is panning out, half. They usually get it very right, Caulfield Cup Day. It races pretty fair, and that's why the club are content to do that and race in the 6 metre position on Cup Day on their biggest day. So it's raced beautifully so far, and I'm expecting it to do much the same. The biggest factor at Caulfield in recent times has been the wind factor, since they've knocked down the grandstands around the home turn there and it's opened it right up. It can get a bit exposed there, but I'm expecting a pretty even playing field.
Just before we get your all-important formula bet, can I just ask you about race number 2? Because I dare say a lot of punters will be looking to start their day with Ranier, who was a certainty beat last start, but she's a dominant favourite now at $2.50. Then you've got Yulong January, who's undefeated at $4, and Wild Planet looking for a hat-trick of victories at $8.50. Is the favourite too short because it was a good thing beat last start, or is it a good time to get on, having had everything go wrong?
I think it's overbet, but it's a race I don't really want to play because I think Yulong January is a really smart horse, but he's deep into his first preparation, whether he can just keep going. Wild Planet, he was unlucky as well in the Rainier race. He was 3 wide and working and did a good job. So it's, I think it's a bit of a tricky race. And then you get a fresher horse on the scene like Ring a Ding Ding, who just is building his form for Darren Weir. I think they're the main chances. But it's an interesting race, but I don't know if I want to get too involved.
I don't know, punters beware for race 2. Bit of heads up from Dino Willey. That's good stuff. Dino, the formula bet, please.
Yes, Half, that's a really good question that you ask. And it is for Mick Kaufman of Diggers Rest. And for Mick, we are having $40 the win race 3, number 6, Eduardo, $40 the win race 5, number 6, Very Elegant, and $40 on the all-up of the pair, race 3, number 6, into race 5, number 6 for Mick Kaufman of Diggers Rest.
Which, of course, comes to
$7.75
for Mick. Good stuff, Mick. Hope it goes well for you. And again, what we've had here with the all-up bet is two specials that aren't in the quaddie legs. This is good business. So we've actually covered 6 legs of the day tomorrow.
60% of the card.
60% of the card. I like this from Dino.
Dino, does 70.
So we talked about race 2 as well.
Yeah, we did race 2 as well. So we've got most of it done already.
Just listen for races 1, 3 and 4 tomorrow.
Very Elegant going to win the Oaks?
Oh, she's a good chance. It's it'll be interesting to see her tomorrow at 2,000 metres and second run for the Weir Stable because she's only a recent addition to the team. So I think she'll progress forward and win tomorrow and we'll go from there.
And Scott Gullen, the main man from the Herald Sun, is back with us on a Friday morning. Always good fun with Scotty. Hello, Scotland.
Hello, Daniel. Wonderful. It's very good. It was London fog early this morning down in God's country.
Everyone was on wheels.
Yes. And look at it now. 29.
It's going to be hot today. It's going to be hot today. We've got Dave and Shepparton's up at Palm Springs, Paradise Palms in North Queensland, playing golf today and listening. Great to have you on board, Dave.
You're playing today too.
Oh, man.
It's a golf day, I was going to say.
Day. It's a good golf
really?
Day.
Really? Where at?
Commonwealth today.
Oh, as you do.
Why not? Guest of?
I'm playing on Monday.
Yes.
With some members of the panel.
Mm. Not this one.
Draft.
Pre-draft activities.
Pre-draft.
You'll be there.
Okay, we'll pick number one goes to X. That's what you got to do.
Come on.
What have you been doing for 6 months?
It's big business.
No, it's not.
It's big business. You'll be there.
It's the next day, isn't it? Or is it Monday?
Scotland.
When's the draft, Adam?
Daniel told me this morning it's on Tuesday.
So on Monday you can't do anything else but watch videos.
Meetings.
You got to do like the strategy type thing where they
coaches
do
meetings.
Simulation.
The order.
Hopefully the AFL will tell us what's happening.
Oh, you don't know.
With the competition. Hopefully. I would like that to be the case.
No, well, I'll be at Metropolitan with my man Adam.
Yeah, team formats.
Is it? Yeah, I haven't read that email.
Is it?
Is it? Or can I just shoot?
Jensen's.
What's that?
Now, Jensen's is a good way to play golf.
Can I just smash my drive and then go and put it somewhere?
It's like everyone drives and then you play your ball from the best drive.
So it's just unleash and
it's an aggressive, attacking, entertaining type of format.
And then we all play the ball from there to the hole.
But you've still got to have your three drives each.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a good game.
That's good.
Sounds like fun.
Well, I'm very, very happy.
Well, that's Monday, of course. Before we get to that, you've got some sporting activity to get through. And my understanding is that the good people of Avoca will be graced with your presence this weekend.
It's a regular trip. We get on a bus at 8:30 in the morning, Daniel. It's quite early. It might be Eskies there at 8:30, which is even more inviting. And then we go there. It's a wonderful day.
Chocolate milk in the
Chocolate milk, yes. And Punters Club, I think there's about 15 of us, and we go there. Avoca, it's like Derby Day in Avoca. People come from everywhere. A few football trips, netball trips. They get dressed up. It's very giving back to the people of the country, Daniel.
It's
something
a great day.
You need to look at some point.
I've had winners at Avoca. I'm an Avoca specialist.
You were very nice with Danny O'Brien, I noticed. There wasn't really much
consternation.
No.
Why would there be consternation?
That former nag you had trained by him that lasts about 5 minutes.
Well, at least she's not on wheels like yours.
I heard there was angst in the end, but
you
seemed to cover it up.
No angst.
You and Dan.
You're an idiot. No, hey, we got her sold. It was a great result.
Yeah, I know that.
One of the great results of all time.
Too.
No, value for money.
Avoca's very good. I'm excited. So my preparation today will be good.
The Herald Sun offices, have they been excited with what's happened post the AFL trade deadline on Wednesday night?
It was a bit of a letdown factor for the lads, to be fair.
Why?
It was a lot of just... It took a lot out of them. You ring Adam Ramanescus 35 times in a week, it just beats you down. It wears you down.
So what's happening in the offices now? What are they just sort of slouching on the floor? Wow. They used up all their energy, all their carrots, so to speak.
I was amused that AFL.com went with next year's free agency list an hour into... yesterday. So, no, it's they've taken stock, like everyone, and just thinking, is it a good system? Did it work? Who won? All that sort of analysis is still ongoing.
We've actually got to look at just the free agency discussion. You've actually got to look 2 years ahead.
Yes, now, well, that's clearly.
The ones that are out of contract, if they get to that point, well, they've made a mistake, clearly. Yeah.
You've
got to look 2 years out, the ones that are coming out the following year that might be on the table. That seems to be the way things are rolling at the moment.
But, I mean, overall, I think a lot of people moved. I was okay with it. I don't know whether the 8:30 prime time I wasn't watching on TV, whether that captured the imagination or not.
What did you make of that? Why are you a TV connoisseur?
I said yesterday I thought that the AFL.com coverage was actually really good.
Just behind the Herald Suns. But yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Did they have a live coverage there as well?
Yeah, they would have.
Like a
video stream?
Was videos you could click on.
Yeah, no, yeah, I thought...
No, there wasn't.
But was it on Fox?
Was the AFL.com stream, were they in the Superbox next door to where...
I don't know where they were. They were in the precinct.
Yeah, they were
on location.
They were right inside.
They had actually the vision of the meeting room when they came in and did the signatures and all that sort of thing. Yeah, so, no, I thought it was...
So they then... What happened is once a deal got signed off on... The manager or the club
would walk in there.
Yeah.
And do a were you on site?
Yeah, I was on site.
Did you have to sign any paper or anything?
I was done. See, what you do is if you do your work you don't have to do it late.
Who did you do?
We did 20 deals.
Well, now we're we.
Oh, he's a big fan of we when it's going well.
Now, here, the whisper today in your favourite column.
I did see that.
What are your thoughts on that? I found that remarkable. Melbourne and Fremantle, Daniel.
Yes.
Apparently there was a phone call on Friday that didn't go so well. There was a bit of clunking.
Yes.
And from that point...
Hang up, clunking. To
Wednesday night, Melbourne and Fremantle, no talkies. Zero talkies.
So that was in the result of that was initial the Hogan conversation deal on Friday about. Was the Peter Bell, we're not doing any more due diligence.
And then clunked. So then TLA, our wonderful friends... had to coordinate the whole thing, which is fascinating. So they were the Switzerland, as I call them, in the middle of everything, and made it happen. That's why you're the best in the business, Rama. Can you enlighten me?
there's
pretty sticky situation.
I think we did that on a number of deals. The Lockie Neal to Brisbane deal, we were obviously...
So clubs just crack it and go...
Well, what happens is when you're doing deals that involve multiple clubs, there has to be sort of... a person in the middle that's able to, as you say, be Switzerland. And that was really what we had to do in the end. We had to orchestrate how all the deals would work and how the picks would look because we were able to find out what each club wanted. And once you're able to do that, then you can, okay, so you put the four or five clubs up, whatever we had on the board, here's what they each want, and then you work backwards from there. And then you're able to go back to the club and say, okay, we've got this, will you accept this? So
but that's pretty extreme.
Yeah.
That was pretty extreme, though, in no talkies.
Yeah, a little bit, but it's not uncommon, I wouldn't say, through the period of time. So, but yeah, you know, we're lucky we're very experienced in this and trade, and we're able to get the results that our clients wanted and also what the clubs wanted.
What is your take on your football club, the great Adrian, waiting till half past seven?
Terrific they got Dylan Scheel, there's no doubt about that, but at the same time, I thought they paid a heavy price for him.
Well, they didn't want to.
No, they didn't. So
going to have to.
You feel sorry for Rob Forstenite, their recruiting manager over the next couple of years.
Rob Forstenite?
That's a blast from the past.
Really, is he?
Yeah, you all sound surprised.
Well, we are.
Well, Merv Cain was the recruiting manager. Merv retired.
Robbie Forstenite.
Yeah, so Rob Forstenite is in that chair now.
Wow.
Did he do the summer with me at Carlton? Did he do a summer at Carlton?
Did you play for Carlton?
That's one of the greats, you know that.
Robbie Forstenite, I did not know that.
I thought that was like what local clubs do when they get sort of players to come down. And
Jordan Bannister.
Yeah, correct. Cause played there. Jordan Bannister played there.
And Robbie Forstenite was there too. Well, I didn't know Robbie was in recruiting. There you go. And not just in recruiting, the main man, it seems.
Very good.
What's your thoughts, Scotty, on your man, Tim Kelly? Because the thing that emerged yesterday was the fact that they're trying to push, as in the Kelly camp are trying to push that he'll remain in Perth until after Christmas and do a pre-season in Perth with his sort of family back there and then sort of come back to Geelong after the Christmas break.
Well, that's interesting. Now, I liked what Geelong did because I think, yes, they understood family, which they dealt with this year. When the manager said, we really want to get home to Perth, but only play for one club. That made it a bit cloudier, I would say.
Do you know why there is some consternation between Kelly and Fremantle? Because it's not his manager and Fremantle.
He keeps saying I'm best mates with Peter Bell.
Well, he's a director of South Fremantle and he's a Fremantle fan, the manager.
I think it became more, oh, West Coast won the flag, I want to go there, for instant success, rather than... I think there's a little bit of that. So Geelong found this kid. I think Geelong had all the right grounds to stand.
What would have do you know now in the wash up what they would have done to get the deal done?
I think they wanted a future. Well, they're getting 20 or 22, and they wanted a future. They were getting both of them.
I think, yeah.
They wanted the first round of
without being involved. I think what it all worked out to be, once you calculated all the points, was pick two.
Yeah, no, but people don't understand that.
That's right.
I know you guys love saying that, but the punters out there...
I don't like saying that. Because it's
that doesn't mean you got picked through in the draft.
Spot on. I agree. I totally agree with that.
I think they wanted some sort of first round action.
I think they picked Tim Kelly last year at
24.
I think they wanted... I think Geelong wanted to pick way inside.
Yeah. Okay, so if they were being offered 20 and 22, what was happening behind the scenes was Geelong and West Coast independently of each other going around to other clubs saying, okay, if we bundle 20 and 22 together, what could we get for that?
Yeah.
So it's sort of like Geelong and West Coast potentially were doing that. If they could get 8 or 10, perhaps then the deal would have been
done. I think 12, 13, something like that would get it done. But, I mean, the kid is, they like him. He likes playing there. Yes, there's family issues. He'd said, and I don't think he was making it up, that I will come back. And now you said there's a bit of a curveball to that. He spoke to Chris Scott in the lead up. I think they're comfortable with him coming back.
From a welfare point of view, Geelong will make it work.
Yeah.
They're excellent.
I think they were pretty good getting him through this year, to be honest. I mean, the poor bloke had 3 under 3 in a foreign town. They did a pretty good job.
I wonder if Josh Boone from Melbourne United Prince Harry, Duchess of Sussex, Meghan Markle man. We'll ask him. He's on the line from Melbourne United. Good morning, Josh.
Hey, good morning. I can't say as though I was part of that crowd yesterday.
Not really your scene?
Nah, not really.
Hey, can I ask you, how are you feeling? Because you've had a massive month with Melbourne United, the trip to the States and the pre-season games over there, and then you played quadruple overtime in the game against Illawarra last week. Had to back it up Sunday against New Zealand. How are you feeling?
Definitely better than on Sunday, that's for sure. You know, we've had a few days here to kind of recover. We've had a little bit of a lighter week this week because we know that, as you said, the last couple of weeks have been really tough on our bodies and mentally as well. So, you know, we've kind of taken a step back and, you know, just tried to get our feet back under us. And now for the rest of the week, we're going to go pretty hard and get ready for this big game on Sunday against Adelaide.
Yeah, it's going to be a big game on Sunday. And there's obviously a few new players into the roster and you're trying to work out your chemistry and cohesion. How do you see that happening at the moment? Is it going to plan?
Yeah, I think it's going pretty well. Anytime you add a bunch of new pieces, it's going to take a little while. We showed that last year when it kind of took us a few months to really get to the point of being that championship contender that we knew we were. And, you know, I think we're ahead of where we were last year at this time, but it's going to take a little bit more time. You know, DJ has shown how good he can be. Unfortunately, he's been battling a couple of injuries and we're hoping that we're going to get him back for Sunday. And, you know, when you bring in a guy like Mitch McCarron, he's a great player. You know, he can do a lot of different things. And, you know, we're still kind of experimenting with him as well to see, you know, where we can use him to get the most out of him. And then we've got a couple other guys as well. But I think we're going pretty well, and I think we're headed down the right track right now.
So the status of DJ Kennedy for Sunday, did he train this week? Have you got training today? Will he be available?
You know, we're going to have to wait and see. I can't really say one way or the other because I'm not the trainer. But, you know, we're still hoping to get him back for Sunday. I think he's trending positively, but we're going to have to wait and see.
And a little bit of help for you on the boards, Josh, would be quite helpful at the moment. It just seems in that game, particularly against New Zealand, that they were able to probably, just inside, they were able to get an advantage there. Do you need a little bit of help there?
No, I mean, I think I think we're a good rebounding team. I think we just need to be better. You know, we need to be a little bit more physical, and Dean has brought up the point that we just need to hit first. You know, a lot of times, especially in that New Zealand game, we were not the ones initiating contact. It was New Zealand that was doing it. So I think that's really a key for us, is just making sure that we're the aggressor as opposed to, you know, reacting to that first hit.
Just that whole thing about adjusting, Josh, a championship-winning team from last year to this year and having different players. How much of it is you keep with your winning formula, and how much is you've got to change because you've got a different team?
It's kind of a mixture. Obviously, we set a good, you know, we developed a good culture for the team last year. You know, we developed a winning culture, and as you said, we did have a good formula. That being said, our team is pretty different this year. You know, we're a little bit faster than we were last year. You know, when you change out a guy like Ty Wesley, who is, you know, a great post scorer, and really, really helps you in the half court, you know, you have to kind of change things a little bit, because we don't have that dominant post scorer anymore. You know, we added DJ, we added Mitch, we added Alex Pledger, but, you know, none of them are really that major go-to guy in the post that we had in Ty. So, you know, we've had to kind of change things around a little bit, and you know, we're still trying to find our way. But, you know, I think this is kind of the time of year where pretty much every team is still trying to find their way. You know, you look at a team like Sydney, who has, you know, what many people have said to be the best roster ever in the NBL. I don't know if that's the case or not, but, you know, I think they're trying to find their way a little bit as well. I think they've struggled a little bit at the beginning of the year. So, you know, it takes time for teams.
I know we're all very excited in here about what's going to unfold tomorrow night at Marvel Stadium for the derby to kick off the A-League season for Melbourne Victory in Melbourne City. And I reckon Kevin Muscat might be more excited than us all put together. Coach of the Victory joins us on The Breakfast Club. Good morning, Muskie.
Morning, gents. How are you?
We are going very well. Are you excited, Kevin?
Yeah, it's been a productive off-season for us. And it's nice to get into the competitive stuff. And what better way to kick that off with a derby. So it'll be a huge crowd out there tomorrow, and we're looking forward to putting on a good show.
We were talking to Josh Boone before the break, early season, obviously, in the NBL, you guys kicking it off. Have you got a handle on what you think might happen tomorrow night with your boys?
Yeah, I mean, you can go down that track and start worrying about or try and think and assume what's going to happen, but the reality is, you know, you can give as much information as possible, but the details of what occurs tomorrow night are yet to unfold. So no one can be across exactly that. Yes, we've got a good, you know, grip on the opposition, and we'll, you know, we respected them in the way we prepare and analyse them. But you know, we've worked very hard on ourselves over the last, you know, 3 months, and in particular the last, you know, 5 weeks when we've had, you know, all the squad together collectively.
What have you liked through the preseason, Kevin, going into this first game that makes you feel confident you can start the year well?
Yeah, look, like I said, I mean, we've had the entire squad together for 5 weeks, and I think for the entire preseason, the way we've gone about working, and particularly in the last 5 weeks, they're just working on you know, structural stuff, and you know, what we think's going to give us an advantage in terms of you know, playing the style or formation, if you like, to get the best out of individuals. That's going to complement the team. So, you know, from that perspective, we've been working away, and you know, we'll get better as time goes on, and you know, it starts, the actual competitive game start tomorrow night for us. But you know, we'll get better and better as the season goes on from that important perspective.
As Half said, we just spoke to Josh Boone, part of the United winning team, and we asked him about staying with that winning formula that got them the championship, but then having to change because of different personnel. You're in a very similar situation. Can you sort of put a percentage on what you keep the same and what you've had to make different?
I think to summarise it as quickly as I can, you know, our style, I think, will remain. As a football club, I think it's part of the DNA now that we want to be you know, attacking. We want to be aggressive in terms of controlling the game, you know, with and without the ball. And, you know, we want to excite our members and fans, especially at home. How the differences, I suppose, and the changes, the personnel that comes in and fitting all those individuals into, you know, what's going to be best for the team is challenging, but it's also exciting and fresh for us.
Kev, you talk about that new personnel coming in, but one who's not new is the skipper, Carl Valeri. Will he be fit for tomorrow's game?
Yeah, Carl's missed our last couple of games, but the squad is all good, and particularly Carl, in terms of your question, yeah, Carl's fine and ready to go.
Your man Honda, was he a bit surprised, Kev, with the training in the park and the punters just striding by? Was that one of the shocks to the system?
For him, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that are done differently in Australia to, Europe, I suppose, and South America in terms of the secrecy of, you know, training.
That was the best of The Breakfast Club. If you want to hear the full interviews again, go straight to the website, rsn.net.au.